Smoke Alarm Saturday, this Saturday beginning at 9 a.m. We've put in more than 730 smoke alarms from October 2023 to July 24, and we think we'll reach 800 by the end of August. And just to give you perspective, and how appreciative I am of our fire department, the entire fiscal year 23-24, the Red Cross, who is our amazing partner in this, they're the ones providing these smoke alarms that's allowing us to do this. I think they put in 100 for the fiscal year 23-24, and we're at 730. So it's been a really good partnership.
That's pretty impressive numbers-wise for kind of a pilot program that Pensacola Fire Department put together. So that's pretty cool. Joining us now, we have D.C. Reeves, the mayor of Pensacola. That was from the press conference yesterday. D.C., welcome back to the show.
Morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm good. I just think it's a neat program. As you mentioned yesterday, lots of other counties and cities are looking at us and what we're doing and seeing, hey, fire alarms save lives, as we well know, right?
Yeah, and remember, you know, we had that rash of unfortunate, you know, tragedy where we had a few fires where there was loss of life and even worse, caused with at homes that had no smoke detector in them. And so, you know, when you talk about how can you make a change of something that you can control, that's why we've gotten really passionate about this. And our fire departments and Red Cross have been awesome. And if you think about it, we've got 21,000 households in the city. If we went by sanitation, bills, a little less, 20,800 or so. And this is 730 smoke detectors on our way to 800. You're talking about, when you think about 3% of the city, almost on average, I mean, that is really covering some ground. And it's inevitable. I guarantee you in the next 5 years, 8 years, we're going to have a fire where lives were saved and property was saved by one of these. It's only a matter of time. And that we just know that loss of life increases so significantly when there's not a working smoke detector. So, they're out there saving lives. We don't know which ones yet, but we know it's inevitable that someone's life will be saved by these efforts.
And this will probably wind up being the news we don't hear about because it doesn't happen or because they are out safely and it's just a structure fire or something like that. But no, that's public safety, job one. That's good stuff. Lots of things to get to with you. First question, or just maybe a comment. I wanted to give you props on the air. As you well know, I was in Milwaukee last week and had a very good experience at the airport. Processed me quickly through TSA and, you know, both directions it went well. Did we talk about this last week? I can't remember if we did. Maybe we didn't. I apologize.
I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, just so you know, if you ever have a theory, you know, part of building a good reputation is, and I get it right now, if you posted something on social media that said, what do you think about airport lines? Because we felt a little pain.
Yeah.
But the fact of the fact, we TSA tracks literally the average minutes per hour that it's taken someone to get through. So, I mean, we're happy with where we are considering where we were. So I understand people having some frustration from previous, but I can tell you the data suggests our worst scenarios right now are inconvenience. Like it's not someone missing a flight. I mean, we might have an hour where a machine's down and it's 30 minutes. 35 minutes, but if you're there an hour and 15 minutes before your flight, much less 2 hours, you're getting through.
Yeah, I had no problem. I was, I was cautious. I got there 2 hours ahead. The line looked long to me, and 16 minutes later, I was on my way to the terminal. I mean, it was very, and they were not just efficient, but very professional and courteous and helpful, the TSA agents. So it was like, you know, all around a very good experience from my perspective. You're gonna have a meeting, I think, tomorrow with county leaders about figuring out how the new homeless ordinance is gonna affect plans to allow what? Camping and or building a shelter, which we do not have the money for, but these are the kind of what we need to do, right?
Exactly. So we're called a meeting with city county leadership and staff to figure out that, you know, we've got an obligation coming October 1st in terms of what the state's asking us to do and what to be able to provide. So what's our next step? And so we've convened that meeting. We'll see kind of what the county has going on or what their thoughts are. Certainly, you know, we have some thoughts and you're right. It's why we brought John DeCarmine in that is running a very successful low barrier shelter. Was the last thing I wanted to do was say, yes, we're going to definitely open a low barrier shelter. And then all we have is $1 million one-time money. and it's going to be at least that to buy a building, probably. Then we got to renovate it. Then we've got to operate it at $2+ million a year. So what I've said is I've kind of tabled that as a bigger community conversation, whether that's businesses, hospitals, city, county. You know, that's going to have to, if we're going to do that, that's going to be a significant lift that we've got to get a lot of people on board for, and can't be rushed by the time we've got to spend ARPA money by the end of this year. That's just not going to be realistic. So I'm committed to spending that last million, $1.1 million of ARPA on homeless reduction. We just might be pivoting how we do it kind of as something that can be in effect and go ahead and get us some housing and get us some improvement of our situation today, as opposed to something that may take a year or more to get everybody on board and be able to fund sufficiently.
And, you know, October 1st is going to get here fast. 3 months is not a long time for something that, you know, especially something of this scope that we've been dealing with for so long. I did want to ask you, it kind of makes me laugh, but it kind of doesn't, because I swear it is one of the questions I get the most often. I get asked questions about the graffiti bridge, you know, and I get asked questions about parking, and I get asked a lot. I say, what's going on with the Grand Hotel? Why isn't the Grand Hotel open? Yeah. What, you know, why doesn't the mayor do something about the Grand Hotel? And I like, what?
Yeah.
What do you want him to do?
Well, the equivalent way to think about it is, imagine if someone was emailing me and saying, hey, why don't you do something about that person's house over there in Pittsville? Not code enforcement, but
right.
I think it should have a second story on it. I mean, you know, in other words, I mean, this is private property that's owned. And if there's a code violation, or something like that, obviously we can step in and have some authority. But at the end of the day, I'm in at least regular communication with the owners. They are conditioning the building. I mean, they are preserving the building with the potential, sale. So I just was trading emails with another person that their representatives have brought forward to us. I think that's our third. There was a national hotel chain. There was a local group. And now there's another group from Dallas or something, I believe, that we've met with in person once, and we are going back and forth with. Now, remember, it's not our negotiation. This is not our property. Why are they meeting with us? Well, they're meeting with us, number one, to have some buy-in from the city, and number two is, like any one of these deals, they're looking at what their opportunities are to make this thing pencil. So what I can tell you and what I can tell the citizens is we are motivated. We've got a historic train station down there that I want to continue to stay preserved. I think that's in the public good. And so we are open to these conversations. And what I can tell you is every time someone calls my office and says, hey, I want to meet with the mayor about a Grand Hotel, I move my schedule around to have that meeting, is what I can tell you right now. So we are motivated to get something there, but we also have to be realistic in what our limitations are. At the end of the day, this is private property. And all I can tell you is, I know the owners are trying to keep and take care of it, and I know they're as motivated for something to happen there as I am. So we're continuing to work it, including to this moment, to this hour right now, and we'll do anything within our power to help get that back into the public realm.
You're telling me you can't just order PPE to go in there and take it over and make it open to the public with rooms and facilities, and that's not how that works?
Yeah, I got pinged enough on it. I thought about it. I was like, maybe I don't know the rules. Maybe I can just go and commandeer the building. I don't know. But I don't think I can do that.
Hey, recycling. I just talked with Bruce Woody last hour, and, you know, you guys are still working with Adams to figure all of this out. I also had somebody had said, tell the mayor that the Summit drop-off is completely overflowing. So where do we stand on recycling? How soon if we know? And what about the Summit drop-off?
So had a meeting with Adams last week as we work through and if you think about all of the things that will have to go into place, how are we going to get people to sign up? Who are they signing up with, Adams or us? Getting the cans back out, marketing it correctly, which is a whole other issue that regardless of what we do. And so there's lots of logistics to think about with this. But the conversations are moving forward. I'm actually having another recycling conversation with kind of one of like the national kind of thought leader groups of municipal recycling.
Okay.
I have that meeting today, and just to think about, all right, if we enter into a third party agreement, what should that look like, and all those types of things as well. So we are moving urgently to get No date yet. But that's not for a lack of us tabling it for what we think are more important issues. We continue to move it forward. But I'll tell you, Andrew, and you've heard me mention this publicly already, you know, we also are trying at the same time to figure out what is the offering from the city when this comes back. Oh, do we just bluntly just keep it at twice a week, garbage pickup, and then add this as a service? That's probably the simplest thing to do. But we're looking at opportunities. Can we offer the choice of either once a week or twice a week? If you live by yourself and you don't need it twice a week, you know, can you have some cost savings there? So there's a couple forks in the road that we're kind of dealing with at the same time, which we think is the cleanest way to bring a product back to the citizen. So more to come on that, but we're not filibustering. We're ultimately trying to get this thing done as quickly as possible.
All right. Well, you know, the old rule about giving people choices is just make sure you don't give them more than three. you'll confuse them.
Yeah, fair enough.
Parking enforcement. You mentioned something yesterday that I don't know whether it was a change from the original plan or not, but that there's a 45-day grace period built in, so it's not August 1st really when the teeth hit. It's September 16th. Did I hear you right?
There's going to be a 45-day grace period for the new time. So from 7 to midnight that we're extending, because that's when people said they couldn't find parking spaces.
Got it.
And right now we charge $0. We need to go into the evening so we can actually create inventory for people to be able to park downtown and move cars along. So all of the other things don't work if you're not lowering that demand at the most peak time. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a grace period for that. And that doesn't mean you can park there anytime you want and you get 8 tickets, but it's either one or two warnings that you would get that were after 7 on that license plate. And then eventually there'd be a ticket. You can't just do it every day, obviously. But, we're trying to acclimate everybody as best we can. We don't want someone to have missed the news and not known that, so we want to be as fair to everybody as possible and get us all accustomed to these new changes.
So not the pay on Palafox, but particularly for the later hours, that's going to be a bit of a grace period. Again, right. Reasonable grace period based on behavior. That makes sense to me. All right. And just one quick thing before we do the lightning round. Party in the park this weekend, right?
Yeah, so skate park 5 to 9 on Friday with Bike Pensacola and Upward Intuition. And then we're doing an event at the pool on Saturday from noon to 5 at Cecil Hunter Pool. So we want your feedback about what that park's going to be. We're going to look back and say, were you at this thing when we talked about the 1.3 miles and what we do with it? So that's our main goal. But we've got a lot of stuff out there for everybody. We'd love for everyone to come out that would use this park or lives by the park. I'm really proud of our team. We're being as proactive as possible in all of these things that we need, community engagement with. I would argue we've never been better right now and more intentional about getting community engagement than we are right now. So,
yeah, and I love
so we'd love to hear from you.
I love this idea that instead of calling a town hall or instead of calling a presentation meeting, what you're doing is you're calling a party and allowing people and seeking input at the party, which that's
correct.
Great approach, especially when the input is needed surrounding amenities that you can entice people to come play with. So I love the approach. We always like to end with a lightning round. Quick questions for you, Mr. Mayor. First question for you is, who was the best or your favorite movie villain?
Oh, man. I think I'm going to say, for me, the memorable one is Bane. I don't know why. It was the scariest. Right,
the
one.
Guy who's going to purge the city of all of its unnecessaries. Okay.
Or maybe the Grand Hotel. I'm not sure.
Bane would have definitely been running his operation out of the Grand Hotel. That seems really obvious. If you had to choose, is it better to be nearsighted or farsighted?
All these philosophical questions. I would say, I think it'd be better to be near, right? I mean, to be able to read your computer screen, read a book, right?
You side with my wife on that one. People tend to answer it's better to be the one than whatever they are. So in my case, I'd rather be farsighted because I don't have to drive with glasses on. And then the last one, and I'm going to take your preferred answer off the table here. A store that went away that pained or hurt you the most, and you cannot say Blockbuster as a former employee. Give me another one.
Toys R Us.
Oh, I mean, every, yeah.
I feel like, I mean, man, that the experience of going to get a Game Boy game and then going to the cage at the end after you turn it in, like, man, the, you know, the sense of the pure joy is still vivid to me over there off 9th Avenue. You know, that was a big day when you got a new Ninja Turtles Game Boy game or something.
I always knew about you. You didn't want to grow up because you're a Toys R Us kid. Mayor D.C. Reeves always joins us on a Wednesday. We look forward to talking to you again next week. As always, thank you for the time and the information. I appreciate it.
All right, Andrew. Thanks so much.